Hello, everyone. Welcome back once again to the Great Scott Podcast. I am joined by adoptee advocate and singer Zara Phillips. How are you doing, Zara?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks for having me on your show.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. And you're an adoptee advocate, and I just want to read a statistic that you had written here, if I can get to it real quick. An adoptee is prone to suffer the only trauma in the world where the victim is supposed to feel grateful. Mm-hmm. And I know that with a adoptee like you are, they're more likely to attempt suicide, and they're also more inclined to turn to addiction as a coping mechanism, just like you did in your teens and 20s. Can you describe what the addiction was in the process of the adoption?
So you mean why I became addicted? Is that what you want to know?
Yeah.
Well, I think and I know I'm not alone in speaking about this, for myself, being an adoptee and being raised in the era that I was raised in, I was never allowed to talk about it. I was never allowed to express how I really felt. Hence that quote at the beginning of, you know, we're supposed to feel grateful, because most people, when you say you're adopted, are like, oh, that's so lucky. You could have been left in a orphanage. Mm. You were chosen. You were special. We get all of that. But what happened for me was I would smile and say thank you, but inside I didn't feel that. I didn't feel grateful. I felt very sad. And I had a lot of questions and confusion around it, and this feeling of there's something wrong with me. If my mother gave me away, there must be something wrong with me. And I think that drugs and alcohol really just replaced that feeling of anxiety, depression, separation anxiety that I had really badly when I was younger, just helped me cope, and they made me feel more normal. But of course, if anyone knows about addiction, it only works for a certain amount of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you keep trying to chase, you know. And I know for me, there was a lot of self-hatred, of feeling of I just don't belong, I don't fit. And I think the drugs compensated for a while. They definitely compensated that. I have a brother also adopted, a couple of years older than me. He was on, you know, around drugs too. So it was introduced to me very young. And then I got sober at 22, thank goodness. Mm-hmm. And I began to realize that it wasn't, you know, within 4 months of putting down the drugs and alcohol, I realized that the truth was I needed to know my story and I needed to understand myself more. So that's when I sort of embarked on my search and reunion.
So what happened to your original parents?
My birth parents. So some people, it's funny, some people, there's all these terminology now in the adoption world. Some people say they like to be called first mother. I was raised as biological mother, birth mother. So for me, I say my birth parents are you know, the ones I'm genetically related to, and my adopted parents were the ones that raised me, just so we clarify. So my story is my birth mother was 17 or 16 when she got pregnant, nice Jewish girl in the 60s in London, gets pregnant by an Italian man that she doesn't really know and is put in hiding. Very common at that time because of the shame. You know, nice Jewish girls don't go and get pregnant by men they don't know as teenagers. So, and that really can go for, you can say that about any religion, really. So there's a lot of shame and a lot of secrecy. So she had no choice but to give me up. Being illegitimate back in the day was not something that could help in your future. And that's what they believed, that I would be better off with a mother and a father. So, what else do you want to know about that?
No, I was just curious about what happened to your mom and dad originally. I know that you were also, you got adopted by another Jewish couple, right?
Yes, yeah. So my birth mother, well, basically, she then went on to get married, had a couple more children, and you know, just lived her life. And then and always thought about me, but didn't think she had a choice in searching, because birth mothers are also told, if you do that, you'll be selfish. Mm. You've got to give this baby a better life. Even though they too are grieving, they're told, just get on with your life. You'll forget, you know, how can you forget that you had a baby? But that's what they were told, still told actually to this day. Mm. And then my birth father, but I found her in my early 20s. I was able to in London, because birth records are open in England, which means I was able to have access to my original birth certificate. Whereas in America, in most states, it's closed, beginning to slowly open in some states. And my birth father, he's Italian from Rome, and I only had a first name, which I got from her. She didn't even know his last name. So fast forward into my 50s, so I meet my birth mother at 24, and then fast forward into my 50s, I match on Ancestry DNA with a sibling who was also adopted, who had found him. Mm. And it turned out, I'm English, as you can tell. Mm. I moved to the States in the mid-90s. I was living in LA, and then I moved to New Jersey. And my birth father was from Rome. He had moved to Las Vegas, and then he moved to New Jersey. He had married a woman from New Jersey. So when we met each other, we were living 1 hour away from each other.
Mm. Wow.
It's crazy.
I know.
You can't make it up. Mm.
Sounds like someone needs to make a movie about this. Anyways, so you were talking about how adoptees were 4 times more likely to commit suicide as well.
Attempt.
Or to attempt suicide.
Yeah.
Was that also a part of your story, that you also had tried to do that?
I had a suicidal ideology more, and just would take loads of drugs and alcohol, okay. Not caring. So not caring. Didn't care whether I lived or died for a few years. And those statistics, they're actually saying now that they're higher than they originally thought. Mm. There's a new study being done. And this goes also for birth mothers too, who fall into deep depressions after they give up their babies and can suffer also with drug and alcohol issues.
Wow. Yeah. That's incredible. I mean, I can feel their pain. I mean, I know why they do what they do, and being separated and being lonely like that, just the deep hurt inside, I can understand. So let's talk about Somebody's Daughter. It was a 2018 book that happened. And then you had a one woman show that the film is based on.
Yeah. So, the crazy thing is that, a few years ago, I wrote a book called Mother Me, which was really about my journey as an adoptee becoming a mother and how impactful that was when I had my own kids. And that had really been a lot of my focus, because I did not think I was going to find my birth father. And then I decided to just write this novel about a girl who finds her father. And when I finished the novel, and I had my agent in England, he was shopping this novel around. And as I wrote this story, and I think in a way it was what I wanted to happen to me, so I wrote it in another character. And as I finished that book, I got a match on Ancestry DNA with my sister, who was also adopted, who had found our father. And then it was suggested, you've got to write again, you've got to rewrite the whole memoir up to this point of finding Vittorio. So that's how Somebody's Daughter came about, because the story wasn't finished. I'd never written, you know, about this part of the journey before. So I finished the book, and that was great and well received. And then the story changed again. Which often in adoptees' lives is quite common. You think you found all your family, and then more start popping up. So another sister appeared, and my birth father passed away really suddenly, only 2.5 years of me knowing him.
Mm.
And it was so devastating. And my adopted father, they both died 8 months apart. And it was so devastating, I knew that I had to complete the story. I couldn't just end on, and then I found Vittorio, because that was not what happened. So the one-woman show, I was like, oh, I'm not going to write another book. I'm going to do a one-woman show. use my music, because I've been a singer for years, and tell the story in a way that's also quite funny. Because what I realized was, first of all, the characters, my birth parents, just their characters, and my adoptive parents, they're kind of funny people. They're out there people. So it was quite easy to do that. And just to show the ups and downs of the reunion experience, and as an addict in recovery, I have long-term recovery, to also show how do you maintain that when you have so much going on in your life, painful stuff, where, you know, those are the days maybe when people would want to have a drink or forget the world. So I wanted to show that it was possible to stay sober even when really tragic things happen. So that was the one woman show. And then I had spoken to the director in England, and I said, oh, well, maybe you could just film the one woman show. And in it, I had voiceovers of all the different characters, and I played both my mothers, myself and both my parents. And he said, no, we have to make a film. Let's bring in all these other actors. And at first I was like, oh, I don't know, but we did. And actually, I'm really pleased with how it came out. So,
wow.
That's involved. I sort of didn't really mean to do it, and it just happened.
Wow. That's just how things turn out. It seems like they just kind of happen out of the blue, and then they go on to be a hit. It seems like. So, you were also encouraged by a couple of guys in a AA meeting as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Were they the ones that kind of encouraged you to do this Somebody's Daughter?
Not specifically, but they were the first guys that I met when I went to my very first AA meeting. And they have just been like brothers to me, but helped me so much in my life. And they're almost like the Greek chorus, you know, where the voice of reason through the whole. And they're still like that. I can still phone them today, and, you know, they're always there for me in that way. So, but they were quite funny, because I said, you know, we're going to make a film, and they're like, well, who's playing me? And you better be good looking. Better have a good looking actor to play me, that kind of thing. But yeah, they've been very supportive.
Yeah. And so to go along with your incredible music, you've gotten to also tour around with a gentleman that I have actually come to know and listen to his stuff, Bob Geldorf.
Oh, really?
I love Bob. He's a very talented man. And I was actually watching something in audience with Mel Brooks, and I just discovered Bob, and I looked him up, and so – I've loved his stuff ever since.
Oh, right. Yeah, from the Boomtown Rats.
From the Boomtown Rats, yeah.
And then he did solo stuff too.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So is he still doing stuff? I haven't heard anything from him in a while.
I don't really see them, but they the Boomtown Rats have been doing, they tour again. A lot of the bands actually from the 80s and the 90s, you find, get back together and they're out there touring again. So yeah. And Bob had a solo career as well. He did some solo albums.
Absolutely. I think he's underrated. I really do. That's just me though. Whoops. There we go. The camera. Yeah, there we go.
But yeah, that was just back in the 80s. I was in a lot of music videos. So that's sort of how it started. I ended up in one of his music videos and then went on to tour. Back in the day when it had MTV.
Yes, the wonderful MTV, which is no longer around. I don't see.
I know.
Yeah.
Bad.
I know. Yeah. So, but anyways.
I love music videos.
I know. Yeah, music has just changed ever since 20, in those days. I mean, 80s and 90s. And so, yeah. And also, you also had a song that you co-wrote with Daryl McDaniels. Of DMC, yeah. Of Run DMC.
Yes. Yeah, that was really fun. And that was really, I met Daryl. In fact, VH1 were doing a story. He's what is called a late discovery adoptee, meaning he did not find out until he was in his 30s that he was adopted, even though he always had a feeling there was something not quite, you know, being hidden from him, but he didn't know what. So then VH1 wanted to do a documentary on him finding his birth mother. And a bunch of us, I was living in LA at the time, we went to be in the documentary as the group, as the support group. And then I just became friends with Daryl. And when I moved to New Jersey, I didn't realize he was actually living very near to me in New Jersey. And at that time, we were trying to help in New Jersey to get the birth records open. Because what a lot of people don't realize, for American adoptees, when they are adopted, their original birth certificate is put in hiding and they are not allowed to have it. So their birth certificate, it makes out that you were born to your adopted parents. Mm. Whereas me from England, I had two birth certificates. My original showing my birth mother's name, which I had to look for when I was searching, and my certificate of adoption. So a lot of the work that I have done, being a British adoptee, when I moved to New Jersey, was saying to people, nothing bad happened in England. They opened the birth records in 75. We are now allowed to have access. I mean, medical records, you know, we don't have anything, especially when you have families. So people wouldn't know whether breast cancer ran in their family, any kind of medical issue. So when I met Daryl, we said, how is the best way to reach people is by music. So he said to me, you write your kind of, you know, poppy, folky thing that you do, and I'll do my rap. And then we made a video.
That poppy, folky, that poppy, folky thing you do, yeah.
And I actually was so pleased with how it turned out. And then we made a video. I don't know whether you saw that. And just sort of, you know, highlighting how important it is to open birth records for adopted people, that they may have their, can you imagine not knowing what your name is and being told you're going into an office and the person behind the desk has access to your information and you don't.
Mm.
It's barbaric.
I know. Yeah.
New Jersey did open. Finally, they opened in New York, but there are still many states in America where it's closed, and adoptees will go to their, you know, deathbeds not knowing.
Mm. Why do you think that is, that they withhold the records from people?
Well, it's kind of complicated. I mean, there's a lot of history in different states of why it was closed. Unfortunately, some of the people that were working within the government were adopted parents who were afraid that their children's birth parents would come and find them.
Mm.
And they were the ones that closed the records.
Okay.
There's also stuff in New Jersey about the Catholic priests. You know, some of them are birth fathers and they don't want to be found out. I mean, there's a lot of underhand stuff that has gone on around it.
I know So I know that I've tried to do like DNA type stuff, ancestry, trying to look for records, and it's almost nearly impossible to find. I mean, going back however far, but I know after I think a certain number of years they release those records, if I'm not mistaken, maybe, but I'm not sure if that's okay.
Not for adoptees, no.
Okay.
Some adoptees can't even get passports.
Oh, okay.
They can't even
get a passport, yeah. Gotcha. And I also want to say, Zara, that I think that we have some mutual friends, Eliza and Eric Roberts, Julia Roberts. Yeah, Julia Roberts' brother. I went to their house in L.A. and interviewed them, and they are such the sweetest people. They really are.
Oh, I mean, well, Eric was the voice of God in my movie.
Yes.
And Eliza plays my birth father's wife in the movie. She's my birth father.
They're just the sweetest people.
Yeah, I've known them for like 30 years. In fact, I'm going to be in LA next week, so I'm going to see them then. But yeah, I've known them for 30 years and very supportive. And Eliza really knew my whole journey about finding Vittorio.
Mm.
And in fact, my first one-woman show that called Beneath My Father's Sky was about 10 years old now. They directed it.
Mm.
Yeah, I've been involved with them for years, so that I'll have to tell them that. So.
Yeah, tell them Mike Scott says hello. They'll definitely know me. I went over to their house, and it was, yeah, I cannot say enough good things about the Roberts family. They're just great people. And also, I don't know if I said this or not, but the song that you did with Daryl was "I'm Legit." That's the name of the song that you did. So I wanted to throw that in there if I hadn't put that in there. But I know that you're in a studio right now, right? Are you going to be performing?
I'm actually not in the studio. I'm actually on tour.
Or tour.
With Richard Thompson. musician Richard Thompson, and we are touring the whole of sort of the east to west coast. I'm in Vancouver today.
Oh, okay. So yeah. For anybody that's listening, Vancouver is where Zara's going to be at. Go see her.
It's his band, Richard Thompson.
Richard Thompson's band. And you'll be performing with them.
Yes.
So if you're out there and listening in Vancouver, go see Zara. I wanted to give you a plug there. I don't know why I keep doing that. But anyway, Zara, thank you so much for your time, and thank you for sharing your story with us.
Thank you.
Very nice to meet you, and best of luck.
Thanks very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Very nice to meet you.
Me too. Bye.